bright boy, could go far. Old woman's missing. Never found her. Bones. Figures the wolves again. And her mutie son found dead, standing upright in the doorway.
A gorilla band?
No. Food taken, he thinks. And some furs. Why would killer steal furs and food with spring coming in fast? Slay 5 people? Why? Then the Jeep Patrol saw a trio of strangers. One-eyed man, red-headed woman, short man in glasses. I checked that. Rimless glasses. They were in furs. Stolen furs, would you say, Alisa Andreevna?
Could be. But there isn't much out that way now, is there?
Now?
She blushed at the sudden sharp look he threw her. With the pockmarks and the drooping mustache, she realized he looked like old pictures of the Tartar gallopers who had ruled the steppes centuries ago.
Yes, of course. Once, I think, there were many rich houses. Dachas built by the wicked stallion for his friends, later used by others. Even the Americans had one there.
So, interesting. And then a kulak driving his ox cart sees 3 strangers on the road to the city. Man with one eye, tall woman with red hair, very red hair, he says to Lieutenant Ulyanov, and a 3rd person, pale of face, dark glasses. He walked slowly with a stick. A sickly cripple, thought the old peasant. But this one spoke a kind of Russian.
A kind of Russian?
Precisely. Not like someone from that region, nor, he thought, like someone from the city. So it means he could have come from a different part of the land.
Have you asked the Bureau of Internal Movements if they know of...
No. This does not concern them. It is a problem for us, and we will solve it. But it is surely a great mystery. Most odd.
Most odd?
Clerk Second Class Andreevna nodded dutifully, knowing that such agreement was essential if she was to rise to the exalted position of Clerk First Class. Zimyanin smiled at her.
Other than you would think, my dear.
Why?
Many months ago, I encountered some of the Americans. You know this?
Of course, Comrade Major Commissar. Everyone knows of the story.
I met several of them, but among them was a man who had only one eye. His left eye was gone, and his face was scarred. I was threatened by one of the butchers of the Narodniki. My life was spared by a woman of the Americans. She had red hair. Very red hair.
But you don't...
The same man and woman? Of course not. Impossible. Americans in Moscow. That's a good joke, Alisa Andreevna, is it not? But it is certainly very odd.
There was considerable evidence that the Americans, in the final and briefest World War, had used a significant proportion of neutron weapons. Ryan had a miniature rad counter, but it stayed consistently low in the green to yellow margins. Once or twice, he noticed, it flickered well up into the yellow, but it never went anywhere near the limit of orange. But the true story lay in the mute evidence of structural damage. They passed through regions where the nuking had blasted everything out of existence. The devastation had been total. But they also encountered regions where many of the buildings were visibly older. As they began to reach what had been the outer suburbs, they found whole streets of perfectly preserved houses. Occasionally, they saw damaged roofs, but most structures were sound. There were a few signs of inhabitants. Any they did see were busy about their own business, scurrying along with head down, avoiding eye contact with anyone else.
Not many stores.
Not like the outskirts of Bigville's back home.
Rick was exhausted, so they found a house in a quiet side street. Its interior had been stripped, but it was dry and secure. There were so few people around that Ryan didn't bother to keep guard during the night. He bet their lives that nobody had seen them go into the overground garden. The next morning, while the companions ate a breakfast of smoked fish and dried meat, washed down with some of the spring water, they made plans. From the front window, they could see a tumbled apartment building, rusting strips of iron protruding from the shattered concrete. Window frames of torn iron hung loose from the crumbled walls, and scorch marks etched deep into the south wall, indicated where the main blast had come from. From the side window, they could see a towering wall of what must have been some sort of a factory, still visible after 100 years of Russian winters, were the remains of a giant mural. It showed a man, a worker, holding a huge unfurled flag, the crimson toned down to a dusty pink. He seemed to be leading a group of adoring men and women up a hill toward a glittering palace of white stone.
Art on a heroic scale.
Christie flattened her nose against the cold window pane.
What's the message?
The original one says something about how the brave workers of Govorovo will forever carry on the fight against the paper tigers of American aggression and imperialism. That's kind of catchy, huh?
How about the painted stuff underneath?
Ryan pointed to some smeared letters in runny black paint. Rick put his head to one side, trying to make it out.
Difficult. Kind of slang, I guess. Nearest I can get is that one day's fucking is better than 100 days of labor for the party. Guess I'll drink to that.
There were more people in the streets than there'd been the previous evening. The sky was overcast, but the day felt warmer. Since they depended on the furs for disguise and protection, that wasn't good news.
Best try and pick our way closer to the middle of the ville.
I don't know what it's like now, but in the old days, my days, you'd have needed passes to pick your nose in a sex-sensitive region. You saw that patrol. Suppose there are guards out there. Suppose you need some kind of a pass to get to certain regions. It wouldn't be that surprising, would it?
Guess not. No, fire blast. I never thought it'd be this difficult to pick up a hammer and screwdriver. Still, I figure we have to move on if we... What's that?
A ragged, limping man, well below average height, hobbled around the corner of the street, looking wildly from left to right. Everyone else on the street immediately turned away from him, moving briskly off in every direction. Some of them broke into a clumsy, jogging run in their anxiety to get away. Rick moved back from the window as the fugitive's face turned toward their house.
Something's after him.
Someone. Lots of someones. Sounds almost like a gang of kids in a play park.
Like magic, the suburban road was deserted, as if some staggering leper, bright with rad glow, had come screaming into a church social.
Here they come. If he comes in here, we move fast and quiet out the back. This could be bad.
There were around a dozen in the screeching group that was trailing the cripple. Most had knives or long-handled hatchets, while one or two carried nail-studded clubs. They wore an assortment of skirts and pants, but all wore bright red berets with a single silver circle embroidered on the front. From behind the dusty window, it was hard to tell, but Ryan's guess was that none of the pack was older than 12. Their prey had given up. He'd fallen to his knees, partly hidden from Ryan, Christie, and Rick by a spreading yew tree. He was holding his hands up imploringly as the children ringed him. They shuffled around the helpless figure, almost dancing. As they moved around the circle, they made mock cuts at the kneeling man, forcing him to cringe from them.
Well, can we... No, don't answer that. Of course we can't, but that poor little gimp.
Their game didn't last long. Like all children, the pack was easily bored. Rick turned away and walked across the bare boards of the long dead room. Ryan and Christie watched. It wasn't very different from other things they'd seen in other places. Just a few changes.